Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, this is SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Busy week two in the NFL, and before the week even ends, we get news about the Cleveland Browns trading Josh Gordon to, of all teams, the New England Patriots. And we bring in one of the best in the business covering the National Football League for a little bit, for a while now, Jim Trotter, one of the smartest guys in the business as well, at Jim Trotter underscore NFL, Eitan Shander, SB Nation Radio. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Jim. How you doing tonight?
What's up, buddy? Did you tell everyone I paid you to say those things?
Well, the check hasn't cleared yet, so I might have to take it back. How you been, man? Everything well? I mean, it's been a crazy start to the season so far. I know you were in Dallas, so we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But this story, how shocked were you that of all teams, it's the New England Patriots who happened to land Josh Gordon?
I don't know. Out of all the teams, I think I'm least shocked that it's the Patriots. They're a club that, you know, has a history of taking chances on players that other teams might deem to be, you know, someone that you don't want to bring in. The Patriots have such a strong culture in that locker room, and you have such a strong leader in Brady and Belichick, that I'm not surprised at all that they took this chance. And it's really a no-risk chance for them. If it doesn't work, you know, they lose out on a late-round pick. If it does work, you have arguably a guy who, in terms of talent level, might be the best in the league. So from that standpoint, it was a smart move by the Patriots to bring him in.
Yeah, and just the discussion surrounding Josh Gordon and the troubles that he's had to get back on the field, what were you hearing as far as anything that kind of led to the final straw or just Cleveland saying that they didn't want to deal with Josh Gordon? And honestly, and I'll just add this in, Jim, I think it's great that Josh is out of Cleveland and at the very least in a new surrounding. But from the Browns standpoint, is there anything that you heard about maybe the final straw or just something that kind of pushed them to where they had to part ways?
No, you know, we've heard all the stories about him being late for a meeting and you know, not being as diligent in his rehab as they felt he should have. But truly, I don't think this was a sort of a final straw thing. I think it was just an accumulation of things over the years where at some point, a change of scenery is best, not only for the player, but for the team. And, you know, you have Hugh Jackson and Dorsey there trying to create a new culture and a winning culture. And the last thing you need are distractions, particularly among players who are supposed to be your elite guys. So I don't think there was anything major in terms of this last incident. It was just more, as I say, sort of an accumulation of things where you finally just say, it's time to move on. Because truthfully, I had heard in the preseason when he was out that once he came back, the Browns were strongly considering just moving on then. Again, just because it's just this constant distraction as a rebuilding team and a club trying to change the culture, they just didn't want to deal with.
Jim Trotter joining me, Eitan Shander, SB Nation Radio. Of course, the big news coming down is the Browns trade Josh Gordon to the New England Patriots. We'll get into the Sunday night game in a minute. I just wanted to add one more on this, and you mentioned as far as the raw individual talent, a kid who has led the league at least one year we see in receiving yards. If he comes on the field and starts to perform his first week or two that we see it, how dangerous is this Patriots team when you start to look at any other contender in the AFC?
Look, this is not going to be a popular answer, but I have learned my lesson about giving up on the Patriots regardless of what you think their talent level is. So as long as Tom Brady is behind center, as long as Bill Belichick is on the sideline, I'm going to say that they're right there to compete for a Super Bowl. You know, it's funny. People want to react to the loss yesterday. You can go back every recent year with the Patriots and find an ugly, ugly defeat early in the season, and you're like, okay, here's the beginning of the end. And by the end of the season, they're playing for a championship again. I believe it's the same thing now. And if Josh Gordon comes out and plays up to his level, oh, my God. I mean, they are truly getting one of the truly elite talents on the field. But the issue with Josh has never been about talent. It's been everything else.
Is there a bigger issue at hand that Josh Gordon represents with the NFL? And I know that the easy thing is, you know, marijuana versus opioids. But as far as testing and as far as leniency and maybe even as far as teams doing more to get people help that they may need from a mental health standpoint?
Look, I'm going to say this, and I think this gets underreported. the NFL has so many resources available for players to help, whether it's substance abuse, whether it's mental health, whatever it may be. And these teams, you know, they're taking it even more serious now, where some clubs are bringing on people specifically to deal with those things as it relates to mental health. So I don't think it's a team issue or necessarily a league issue at this point. I think it has to get to a point where the players believe that me asking for help or me accepting help in these areas is not a negative thing, and it won't be frowned upon by the clubs. For so many years, as you know, asking for help was viewed as being vulnerable. And right. The last thing you want to be perceived as on a football field is vulnerable. And so players wouldn't, whether it came to concussions or anything else. And I think we're starting to move towards a point where you are seeing players reach out for help. I know of one club, and I won't say the club's name, but I remember the head coach telling me this offseason that he had something like 30 or 35 players who had gone to visit with a team psychologist, you know, during the course of the year to deal with things like depression or some sort of mental health issue, just because they at that point felt comfortable enough, you know, in the culture that's being developed in the NFL. So the resources are all there. It's just getting it to the point where players are comfortable going out and utilizing them.
Jim Trotter, my guest, Eitan Shander, SB Nation Radio. Let's look at the game you're at Sunday night in Dallas. Start with the Giants.
Do
they lose
to?
That.
I don't want to see that one again.
You were there, so I figured you can talk about I hate to have you relive that nightmare, man. All right, what was the worst part of watching that game up close and personal?
Truthfully, the Giants' offensive line. And it just reaffirmed for me something that, you know, I've always believed for years, ever since I really started covering football in my early years. And it's that you build a team inside out. You start in the trenches unless you have that franchise quarterback available to you. But that's where games are truly won. And when you watch last night, what you saw is a Giants offensive line that was completely overwhelmed at times in that game. And the Giants knew this was an issue coming into the season, but they thought by signing Solder in the offseason and free agency and drafting Hernandez, that they would be able, and moving Eric Flowers over to the right from left tackle, things like that, that they would be able to make good on that. But they haven't. And in fact, it might be worse than it was a year ago. And, you know, we're watching in the second quarter there over the course of a couple of series, and I think that the Cowboys had like 4 sacks just in those 2 series alone. You know, the thing that bothered me as an outsider watching it, I remember, and I even mentioned this in the article that I wrote, that, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence comes through for the sack, and, you know, as all these players want to do, he's ready to jump up to celebrate. When he jumps up, Nate Solder's standing in his personal space. And Lawrence just puts both hands in his chest and just shoves him out of the way. And there was no fight back from Nate on that. And it was kind of that way much of the night, I felt, with the Giants offensive line. I didn't see a lot of fight back, you know. And when I talked to DeMarcus after the game, he said, when you make a sack, that's your zone, and anyone who steps into it is disrespectful. And that's how he took what Nate Solder did. But to me, what we're seeing is arguably one of the best skill position groups in terms of wide receivers and running backs, or I just should say receivers and running backs, being wasted because of it. When you talk about an Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram largely being invisible in that game, and Saquon Barkley being reduced to a guy on check down passes, those guys are better than that. But you've got to have protection, and you've got to be able to block up front to make things happen.
Oh, not a good start. So only week 2, and you're dealing with that. Now, on the flip side, I don't know, and I'm sure I'm not alone, Jim, what to make of Dallas. Legit chance at competing for something with Dak Prescott as the quarterback under center or in the gun. What are your thoughts on the longevity of Dak and their ability to truly compete with him as the quarterback?
You know, I can't put it entirely on Dak. You've got to have personnel around him, and you have to ask yourself, what did Dallas do in the offseason to upgrade its receiving corps? You know, you bring in Allen Hurns, and then you say Cole Beasley's going to be your number one. And no offense to Cole Beasley, who I think is a good player, but you're not going to find any other team in the league that says, you know, he keeps them up at night. So if you're Dak, if they're not running the ball effectively, and what we're seeing, obviously, are teams stacking the box to try and take Zeke away, there are going to be issues. The thing that surprised me last night, okay, we saw them try and get more creative and do more RPOs and whatnot, And they said because Dak feels comfortable in that, having done that in college and this that. And you hear Dak after the game talking about, yeah, you know, I was going to run the ball more. He ran for a personal best 45 yards. And he says, I'm bigger than these defensive backs, so that's what you want to do. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. I don't care how big you are as a quarterback. The last thing you want to do is subject yourself right. to, you know, unnecessary contact. So you might get away with that for one or two games here and there. But if you think that that's going to carry you through an entire season, the likelihood is that you are not going to be on the field for 16 games. So that gave me reason for pause. The other thing is, in 8 of his last 10 games, he hasn't thrown for even 200 yards. And they are going to have to find a way to create opportunities in the passing game beyond just last night for this team to do what it wants to do.